It's time to wake to sleep with the number one sleep authority, Sleep Science Today, and Sleep Better Tonight.
All right. Welcome to another episode of Sleep Science Today. I'm your host, Andrew Kolsky. On this show, we talk all about sleep and the science behind sleep. What's really going on? Why are you having trouble sleeping? Why do you wake up in the middle of the night? And everything related thereto. Today, we're talking with Ruthie Eisenberg. She is a psychotherapist and yoga teacher, and she brings a lot of background information that I think will be helpful to the audience. So, Ruthie, thank you for joining us on Sleep Science Today.
Thank you so much for inviting me on the show. I'm happy to be here.
Great, great. Well, we love having the opportunity to speak with people like yourself and learn from your experiences and your training. So I'm going to go ahead and dive right in here. Obviously, if people are listening to the show, it's because they have an interest about sleep. And the reason so many people have an interest about sleep is because a lot of people have trouble sleeping. So in your experience, what makes sleep so difficult?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think there's different layers to this. First of all, we live in a world that's very oversaturated with input. And there's a lot of content, there's a lot of stress today that the modern person experiences coming from all directions. And so during the daytime, there's often for many people, they're just so busy, there's not really an opportunity to rest and restore. Uh-huh. And I like to think of the nighttime as starting during the day. And then the day filters into the night, and then the night filters back into the day. So when people don't have an opportunity to relax, then it's very easy to even forget how to relax. And I see a lot of people in my practice, for example, who live from the neck up, and I was one of those people as well, are very disconnected from the body and don't really know how to relax. There's an expectation at night that when you lay down in your bed, you should just be able to fall asleep. Uh-huh. And having that expectation can actually put a lot of pressure, because sleep, it's not something you can force. It's not like a switch that you can just flip on and off, but it's a state that you naturally fall into under the right conditions. So I believe, and from what I've seen, a lot of times those conditions are either limited or don't exist to support being able to fall into sleep.
Mm-hmm. So, you're describing, very common thing that people run into, and, I'll call it sort of fragmented sleep in a way, is that in the old days, prior to electricity, prior to all the modern conveniences, prior to our work schedules, we had very different lives. And now, you can just imagine the hectic life that one lives, even in the most basic sense. You got a family and young kids and a job and getting the kids to dance practice and soccer practice and then staying up late to finish a project. And you got all the lights on, even though it's late at night. These are all things that are going to impact us and really throw our schedule off. So, you mentioned that we live sort of from the neck up. Tell me more about that. What do you mean by that? And what should people be thinking about?
Yeah. So when I say from the neck up, I mean that a lot of times we live in our heads, and for many years, this used to be me also, just thinking a lot, problem solving a lot, but not really paying much attention to the subtle cues of the body. And I think, this is where there's a missing piece. For example, most people, if we talk about breathing, most people are not really breathing. They're either breathing very shallow or breathing backwards. And this is a result of all the stress of life. Babies don't start out breathing shallow and backwards. They breathe deeply, they breathe really wholesomely. And over time, as the stress piles up, we learn to kind of tense the muscles, the cells get tense, we kind of, you know, hold things, we pause, and this gets trapped in the body. So over time, we lose that connection with the body. And the cool thing is that we can always gain it back. It's the one thing we have for our entire lifetime. So we can always get it back, but we have to slow down and we have to pay attention.
Right. Well, you said something there about breathing backwards. Can you describe more about what does that actually look like if a person is breathing backwards?
Yeah. So breathing backwards is on the inhale, the belly goes in, and on the exhale, it goes out. That's backwards because it's supposed to be when you breathe in. Think of your lungs kind of like an empty glass and you're filling it with water. So when you breathe in, the belly's supposed to go out. It's supposed to expand. And like the water is going in. And then when you breathe out, then the belly contracts back as the air goes out. So that's proper breathing. But most of the time, actually, it's in adults, it ends up being backwards. So maybe it's something to pay attention to.
It's incredibly interesting because as you're talking about it, I'm trying it myself and I'm realizing that, yes, absolutely, indeed, I can breathe both ways you're taught. And it's counterintuitive to me to think that if I'm breathing in, that my belly would go in, but it is, I can control it. So that's something I've never heard before and never, you know, paid attention to. So then what is it that's causing that to happen? Is it our thoughts? Is it just a habitual? Why is that happening?
Yeah, it's really a combination. It doesn't happen backwards breathing doesn't happen in a day. It happens over slowly and over time. So if your starting baseline as babies is breathing properly and deeply and forwards, then, you know, they might have like little stresses that happen. And for example, let's say, you know, the baby is crying and a caregiver is on their phone and not available, right? So then the baby's needs is not taken care of. Then at that time, the breathing might get contracted. And so it learns this is one small stitch of time where it's learning to hold the breath and be really tense and stressed. Mm-hmm. So then over time, you know, you repeat that a million times. And if the proportion of, you know, stress is, it's a lot throughout the day. We have a lot of micro stress throughout the day. So there's a lot of opportunities for holding the breath and for tensing the muscles throughout the day. And so over time, that creates that backwards, that shallow and backwards breathing. And it's actually worse, like, you know, when people get anxious, for example. What is anxiety? Anxiety is when the breathing is very shallow, like hyperventilating into a panic attack. So one of the antidotes is to deepen the breathing. And then when we deepen the breathing, we can down regulate and come back to that rest and digest state, that parasympathetic nervous system. And then we can calm down the whole system and be okay again. And it's something that is absolutely, you know, teachable and controllable.
Mm-hmm. But it sounds like it's something that you have to learn to pay attention to before you can do anything to change it.
Right.
You know, so you mentioned that you used to be someone who lived in your head and you weren't aware of all these issues. Is that a realization you came to and then you decided to go into therapy and all? Or tell us, how did that journey work for you and how did you figure this out? And then we'll get into talking about how you changed it. But let's understand the genesis of this first.
Yeah. Well, for me, I mean, I come from a Russian Jewish immigrant background. So, as a child immigrant, there was a lot of stress in my family. And also the body and mindfulness was not a thing. Mental health was not really talked about. It just wasn't a thing. There was just not very much attention to, to mindfulness or to paying attention to the subtle physical cues in your body. And over time, I lived a very cerebral life. I lived a life of books and thoughts and connections, but not very connected to the body. One of the things that really helped me to get more connected is actually through my psychotherapy training. I had all of these realizations that we're actually more than just our thoughts, and there's so much more to a human being. After that, with time, I got interested in yoga and completed a yoga teacher training, actually multiple trainings, and things just kind of, fell into place from there.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So
Yeah.
yeah, it's interesting kind of the way you described that. And I'm going to guess it's probably a common story for people who go into the therapy field. Because, it's a similar story for me as I went through my training. You start Actually, it was not only going through the training, but then working with clients. As you start working with more and more and more clients, you start to learn more about yourself. And then you start to understand just sort of reactions and interactions and all the things that you're helping clients with. You start to recognize that those can benefit you as well, So that is really interesting, that I'm assuming is probably a very common experience for people in the field. So as you start learning more about yourself and you start sort of, taking stock of what do I do and how do I react to things and how am I doing this? By the time you get your degree and you get ready to get out into a real, full-time practice, what was your thought at that time? Because I know eventually you got into yoga as well and things, or maybe you were doing yoga before. I don't know. Tell us that part. How did this all come together?
I mean, first of all, I really resonate with what you're saying about learning from our clients, and I feel like my clients have been some of my biggest teachers. So after I finished graduate school, I was dabbling in yoga here and there, but I wasn't really so deep into the practice. It was just something that, felt nice to go to a yoga class once in a while. But the more that I started to get deeper into yoga, the more questions I had and the more I wanted to learn about the depths of the practice. And so that led me down this kind of this yoga rabbit hole eventually to complete the trainings. And just as a little bit of context, during that time in life, it was actually a pretty stressful time. I was postpartum with my second child, and there was just I was kind of like a nervous wreck at the time. Just very very overextended. So yoga was really it was my sanctuary, and it was really really helpful. During the yoga teacher training and during the yoga teacher training I one of the things that was covered was this practice of non-sleep deep rest called yoga nidra. It's conscious rest. And I've heard about that practice before, but it didn't really appeal to me so much. I was such a busy person. I wanted to do, intensive, active, dynamic, sweaty kind of yoga. And just laying there in mindfulness didn't, it seemed kind of boring, to be honest, at the time. And however, during the teacher training, when I got to learn more about the practice and how much wisdom it holds and how it's really a gateway to deeper levels of consciousness and a gateway to your core self, it really changed my, it completely transformed me and transformed my life. And I was doing a lot of yoga nidra practices, but and they were very amazing. But one thing that I found was missing was that none of them were specifically sensitive to the Jewish culture. And that was something important to me, to have a practice that's sensitive to Jewish spirituality. So I started creating my own yoga nidra, guided yoga nidra journeys, and recording them and sharing them. And over time, there was just a demand for more and more. So that's how I ended up creating the podcast that contains all of these guided journeys.
Okay. So there's a lot of questions I have about that. And you know, I'm gonna start with the basics of just understanding the different types of yoga so that then we can dive deeper into yoga nidra. But before we do any of that, we've got to take a break here. So we will be back in just a minute on Sleep Science Today, and we'll pick up with a conversation about the different types of yoga with Ruthie Eisenberg. We'll see you right after the break.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling. Cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
Their messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Be sure to visit sleepsciencetoday.com for access to all of our channels and special offers.
Sleep Science Today. And sleep better tonight.
All right, welcome back on Sleep Science Today. I'm your host, Andrew Kolsky. We're talking with Ruthie Eisenberg. And before the break, we were starting to get into the conversation about yoga and how people can use that to really kind of reconnect with their body even. And before we dive deeper into the specifics, can you give us a little bit of background about the different types of yoga and what are they used for and who might use them?
Sure. So yoga is really for everybody, but there are different yogas are beneficial to different people based on their body, their personality, their needs, and their preferences. So yoga is very broad. So there's actually a lot of branches of yoga. But I'll list off like some of the main ones are, Hatha yoga is one of the main branches of yoga. And then from there, it branches out into, It branches out further into there's Ashtanga yoga, and then Ashtanga kind of evolved into Vinyasa yoga. So those are when you think of yoga on the mat and doing active dynamic yoga flows, those are probably it comes from those schools usually, but not always. There's different types. There's also Kundalini yoga, which focuses more on the energetic body and the breath. There's also yoga that's much slower, like yin yoga, which focuses on holding the postures for longer. So you might have less postures in a yin yoga class, but you hold them for longer. And that takes a lot of skill in and of itself. It's very challenging. And then there's restorative yoga, which is really just to relax. It's very low intensity. And then there's yoga nidra, which is not sleep, deep rest. And I feel like there's a lot of directions to go in when explaining yoga. It's a very, very big field.
Right. Now, I didn't realize how big it was until you started to kind of lay it all out there.
Yeah.
But here's the question that I have then based on that. So when you talk about, you know, as you said, sort of the yogas on the mat, you know, those models, what is the ultimate goal of those versus the yoga nidra, so that we understand, you know, how to compare and contrast?
Yeah. So the goal is the same. Yoga, the word yoga means yoke. It means unification. And what are we trying to unify? We're unifying the body, the breath, and the mind. So there's this unification that happens, and that's the goal. The goal of yoga is really to quiet the mind. All of the stuff that's done on the mat, taking care of the body, that's just the hallway towards quieting the mind. So I take care of the body, and the body is happy, then the mind can be happy too. And yoga nidra is it can be combined with any of the other approaches. So have you ever been to a yoga class, Andrew?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, cool. So you know how at the end they have the deep rest, the shavasana, at the end of a yoga class?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So yoga nidra is traditionally done in a shavasana. So yoga nidra is really, it's just the art of shavasana. And so after you've done all the yoga on the mat, you've taken care of, you've done all the movements, everything, you can lay down, and then you draw your senses inward. You remove all of the external input. So you close your eyes, you remove visual, you're still. So you remove the sense of touch. The only sense that is preserved is the sense of hearing. And so you just listen to the facilitator, do this guided, progressive, systematic relaxation, and take you deeper and deeper through layers of consciousness into relaxation. So first you relax the body, then we relax the emotional mind, then we relax the deeper mind, and then a lot of healing and a lot of restoration can happen from that state.
So if someone is participating in a sort of a predefined yoga session, they know 10 o'clock, I'm going to be doing this because I have an instructor and so on and so forth. And they sort of achieve these goals during their session. How does that translate over into their regular hectic life?
Yeah. So if you're saying if they're doing yoga on the mat or if they're doing a yoga nidra session?
A yoga nidra session, let's say that, you know, where they specifically have devoted, okay, this is a time where I'm going to be focusing on this. But then they go back to, got to pick up the kids from school, got to, you know, do all these other things. How are they supposed to bring it all together?
Yeah, that's a great question. How does it translate into, you know, daily life on the ground?
Right.
And Yeah. And so hopefully, if the practice is effective, then it's going to help make a person more calm, more connected, just feel better physically, feel more grounded, breathe deeper. Yoga Nidra, actually, it supports healing for every system of the body. It supports metabolism and hormones and heart health and reproductive system and of course the nervous system. It supports every system of the body. So when we feel good physically, we tend to show up better as just better human beings to be around. And so yoga, so these could be some of the results after the practice. I would say, you know, if let's say like a mom goes and spends, you know, 2 hours doing yoga and then comes home and yells at the kids, that then something is missing there. That's right. Not the point.
Wow.
I've heard clients, it also depends on what intention they're using the practice for and at what time of day. So if they're using it to help with sleep, for example, then they might have a better night's sleep and wake up feeling more restored and clear. If they're using it for trauma processing and healing, then they might feel more, also more energetically clear. They might feel lighter. They might feel like things are less triggering. There's more space between reacting and, you know, consciously responding. So the trigger and the response. So these are some potential effects that we can see.
Mm-hmm. So can you describe to us, you know, if someone first recognizes that they've got this sort of head-body disconnect and they're having trouble sleeping and they've got a lot of anxiety because of all sorts of things that are going on in their life, they hear this podcast and they say, oh, let me give that a try. And they go ahead and they give it a try. What's actually going on from a nervous system perspective that is going to help them lead to better rest and better sleep?
Yeah. So from a nervous system perspective, when somebody lays down to practice non-sleep deep rest, Yoga Nidra, they're putting themselves into a parasympathetic nervous system state, which is the rest and relaxation state. And that's done progressively. So a lot of times, like this is one of the differences between Yoga Nidra and regular sleep, is that a lot of times we actually bring our stress into regular sleep. For example, if you're sleeping, let's say, you know, in a position where there's some muscles are tense, like, you know, like this, in a twisty kind of position, then that actually means that the body is not going to be in complete relaxation because your arm is twisted in a way that the muscles are actually very much tense. So a lot of times also people bring their mental worries into the night, and that might show up in dreams, that might show up, you know, in the mental space. Mm-hmm. So with Yoga Nidra, because the relaxation is so systematic and so progressive, it gives a true chance to relax every muscle in the body. It gives a chance to, after the body is relaxed, then it gives a chance to relax the mind, the emotional mind, and only afterwards the deeper mind. So in that way, this is a difference between Yoga Nidra and regular sleep, and that's how it can affect the nervous system, is that it puts the nervous system into a state of very deep relaxation.
Wow. So it really sounds like a great practice to put into play in a wind down period just prior to sleep, so that you're bringing your whole body and your whole system into the right place, so that when you go into bed and you go to sleep, you're already sort of ready for it, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. I also add that it can actually be practiced at any time. So if somebody is struggling with insomnia and they practice yoga nidra before sleep, then they are probably going to have a better night's sleep. But there's also something to be said for practicing yoga nidra during the day. For example, starting the morning with a short yoga nidra practice to connect with the body and get clear, practicing as an afternoon nap, for example. Many people who work and then may come home from work, this is a great time to practice yoga nidra for 15, 20 minutes. And then you can have a really good time with your family and be rested and present with your family and your children. So as a mom, sometimes I practice yoga nidra before my kids come home from school so mm-hmm. that I can, so that I can be a present mom for them.
Right, right. Well, I know you mentioned before that you have a podcast where you kind of help mm-hmm. people walk through this. So I do want to talk about that in a minute. But first, sure. we've got to take another break. And we'll be back on Sleep Science Today. And we'll continue our conversation about yoga. And then we're going to get into some other interesting areas. So stay tuned. We'll see you on the other side of the break.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Somewhere on Earth, there are 4 acres that belong to you. You don't need to be there in person, only there in purpose, protecting it, defending it, keeping it alive. Because the world doesn't need more good intentions. It needs more meaningful actions. Register your interest at 4acresearth.com.
The station that makes you feel good.
Be sure to visit sleepsciencetoday.com for access to all of our channels and special offers.
Sleep Science Today. And sleep better tonight.
All right, welcome back to Sleep Science Today. We are talking with Ruthie Eisenberg, and we've been talking about yoga nidra. So, Ruthie, you have a podcast where you, I guess anybody can tune in and listen and learn more about how they can do this themselves. What is the name of the podcast and where do they find it?
Yeah, so the podcast is named Na'ale Yoga Nidra for Deep Rest. And it's spelled N-A-A-L-E-H. It's a Hebrew word, means we go up. And it can be found on anywhere on the platform of your choice. So Spotify, Apple, Amazon, anywhere, Podbean.
Okay. So if somebody is brand new to this, they're hearing the show and they say, oh, I want to give that a try. They don't need any special other training or anything. They just listen to the podcast and you'll kind of walk them through what they need to know.
Yeah, it's really that easy. So the podcast has a few, it has some of the earlier episodes have are more informational about how to practice Yoga Nidra. But even without those, it's just the practice, you're guided through everything from start to finish. You're guided from, you know, you lay down. It's really very simple. You just show up as you are. You just lay down in a space that's comfortable for you. And that's it. And just be. And it's a very, you're not asked to do anything. You're only asked to be present, listen, and just receive the gifts of what Yoga Nidra has to offer. And that's it. And it's also very cool because with Yoga Nidra, you are completely in charge of your experience the entire time. So you can always, like with some modalities, once you start, you can't really stop. But with Yoga Nidra, you can always stop and you can always get out of that lightly altered state of consciousness at any time. It's a very safe practice. It's non-invasive. It's free. And it's, you know, and it's very accessible 24/7 at the click of a button.
True. So roughly how long is each episode, just so people know how much time to plan?
Yeah, it actually varies. And there's some that are very short, like 10. There's one that's even 5 minutes. There's some that are very short, like 10 or 15 minutes for times when people don't have much time. And there's some that are longer, like closer to an hour. And those are the full, complete practice. So those, they go deeper, they're slow, they just kind of cover more ground. But if you don't have an hour to spend on Yoga Nidra, then there's also these, you know, smaller capsulated practices.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. All right, so, you know, I said before the break that we were going to talk about some other interesting things as well. And I know we're kind of shifting gears here, but one of the areas that is sort of emerging in the mental health field in a more serious way these days, meaning there's a lot more research being done on it, there's a lot of attention being given to it, is psychedelic-assisted therapy. And I know in the sleep field and also in the other areas where I work, you know, studies are being done to consider different types of psychedelics and how they may or may not positively impact us. And one of the therapies that's out there already is ketamine assisted therapy. And I know you work with that as well. So I'm curious if you could give us a sense of what exactly is ketamine assisted therapy? How does it work? Is it dangerous? Is it legal? Why is it used? Give us the whole kind of summary as to what it is.
Yeah, sure. So the field of psychedelic assisted therapy, I think the key word here is assisted, because it's very different from recreational use of any kind of substances such as psychedelics. Mm-hmm. Here we're talking about therapeutic context that's used specifically for healing purposes. One of the things that's unique about ketamine is that it is the only psychedelic that's completely legal in all 50 states. And in fact, ketamine has been prescribed has been used in hospitals in higher doses as anesthesia for a very long time, for decades. Huh. It's even in my training for ketamine assisted therapy, there was a pediatric neonatologist who was using ketamine performing surgeries on little tiny babies in the NICU. So in higher doses than somebody would be getting who's doing ketamine assisted psychotherapy. So I think that gives an idea of its safety profile. It is extremely safe, which is why it's used in these hospital and medical settings.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's also the reason why it's legal, whereas other psychedelics are not. Ketamine, it has a lot of research behind it, and it's a very gentle medicine. This is also why it's used as a horse tranquilizer, because horses are very sensitive animals, so they need something that's very gentle. Mm-hmm. And ketamine does that job. When we talk about specifically ketamine-assisted therapy, it's used for several purposes. One can be for people who have been in therapy for a while and just not having breakthroughs or feeling kind of stuck in therapy and want to have more breakthroughs or go deeper. People who have trauma, people who have actually for suicidal depression, it can be very life-saving to have ketamine-assisted therapy. And also for anxiety and a variety of other issues, as well as just to explore in greater depth. One of the things that ketamine can help with is neuroplasticity and also neurogenesis. So neurogenesis is the creation of new neurons, and neuroplasticity is the creation of new pathways between them. So after ketamine session, a person enters this very nice neuroplastic window when the mind is just more fertile and receptive to changes in thoughts, in patterns, in behaviors. It's much easier to do. It's like, you know, the changes can feel like you're, you know, skating on a smooth ice rather than trying to scale a vertical mountain. So, wow. Yeah. So, yeah.
Well, so I just want to clarify. So yeah. This is something where a person will be working with a medical doctor to prescribe, and then yes, a therapist to kind of work out what's going on in their mind.
Correct. So the way that the setup goes is that as a therapist, I cannot prescribe ketamine. A person who's interested in ketamine would go through a medical partner. A partner is the medical prescriber, and have a medical screening with them, and then they would be the prescriber. So the platform that I partner with, for example, is called Journey Clinical, and they provide the medical team.
Uh-huh.
And then in the therapy itself, there's two types. There's lower dose and then there's higher dose sessions. And so as a therapist, first of all, we would do preparation ahead of time. We don't just start dosing clients with ketamine on the first session. First, we need to do preparation. We might do some somatic work first, really get to know their situation, what their goals and intentions are, their story. And then if ketamine is the right fit, then they would have a dosing session. And then after the dosing session, they would have integration sessions. And the integration sessions is what's really most important, to bridge everything that they've gained from the experience and utilize that window of neuroplasticity to reinforce the gains in daily life.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And help make sense of the experience.
Interesting. So basically, we're using ketamine to enhance the brain's opportunity to develop those new pathways to help break from some of the things that may be causing us issues today.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I also want to just add that, you know, in some states, there are other psychedelics that are legal as well, but different psychedelics have their unique signatures and their unique strengths. And mm-hmm. one of the strengths of ketamine, for example, is that people who are on certain medications like antidepressants, this would be a barrier to some of the other more classical psychedelics like psilocybin or MDMA or ayahuasca. But with ketamine, because it works on a different receptor, it works on the glutamate receptor, it's actually not contraindicated. So it can be a really nice option for people who are on SSRIs.
Interesting.
And so, yeah. And wow. In its own right, it has its own unique kind of signature that's very different from other psychedelics. So,
right.
Yeah.
Wow. There's so much more that I'd love to ask you. Unfortunately, we have reached the end of our time limit for this particular show, but at least we got a little bit of an introduction as to what it is and kind of how it works. So let me do this, because we are out of time. I'm going to give you an opportunity to sort of wrap it up in terms of any final thoughts for us, any things that people should be thinking about before we close out the show.
Yeah, I just want to tell people, especially those of you who are struggling with sleep or with anxiety, that it doesn't have to be a life sentence, and that it is possible to get better sleep and to move in the pathway of recovery in your own way, at your own pace, and not always linearly. So just a lot of just holding a lot of compassion for everyone. And if you want to learn more about ketamine-assisted therapy or yoga nidra or anything that we've talked about on the show, then you're welcome to reach out.
Okay. And how would they find you? Do you have a website?
Yeah. So you can go to my website, which is www.mentalfitnesstherapy.org. So that's mentalfitnesstherapy.org. Or you can just Google my name and I'll show up on your search.
Great. And they go to your website, will they be able to find the podcast that you shared?
Yeah, the podcast is on my website as well. And if you want to find the podcast, maybe we could put a link to it in the show notes.
Sure.
Or you can Google my name and podcast, or my name and Nale Yoga, Deep Rest Pod, Yoga Nidra. So it should show up in your search.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to share all of this with us and the deep dive into better understanding Yoga Nidra. I wish you success in your practice. If you all are listening to this show, obviously, you know, if this is an interest of yours, please visit Ruthie's website, listen to her podcast, and then don't forget to come back to listen to additional episodes of Sleep Science Today. We've got a new episode every week for you. There's lots of great information out there, lots of great work that's being done, lots of great practitioners like Ruthie. So please remember to join us and check out our own website, sleepsciencetoday.com. See you all on the next episode.
Thank you so much.
You have been listening to Sleep Science Today, your number one sleep authority.
Sleep Science Today.